From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for Sunday, May 8th, 2016. And a very happy Mother's Day to everyone this morning. Welcome to our weekly review of what's happening in the world of politics, everywhere from Washington to Springfield, with a dose of City Hall in between. We'll take a look at the past week in politics, give you a heads up on what to watch in the days ahead. So grab that Sunday paper, your cup of coffee, and we'll try to get this week off to a very, very good start. And, you know, guys, I got to tell you, finally, it's so nice to get this dose of summertime in Chicago. Yesterday was a little cooler. That wind was horrible yesterday, but we've got a beautiful Mother's Day ahead here with temperatures up to 70 degrees.
Yep, just about 70. That's right. Sunny day today. Interesting thing to point out very quickly, though, Rick, if you noticed some haze in the air this morning, Mike Hammernick, our meteorologist, was saying that is residual smoke that's making its way down here from that wildfire in Canada we've been reporting on.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, I know yesterday in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities, the way that the wind pattern was, that they were getting haze as well. And apparently even our friends over at CNN down at their headquarters in Atlanta were saying that they were getting haze in the air down in Georgia as
Isn't
well.
That something?
Just amazing. And they're saying that's going to burn for months, and it's already threatened to move from Alberta into Saskatchewan.
That's correct.
And
evacuations taking place at Fort McMurray.
90,000 people.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, it's just – and then also I was reading that one expert says that because of the kind of the peat in the forest there, that it could actually – this wildfire could – you know, seemingly be out, but it could be burning underground and come back even next year.
Wow. Yeah. It's one of those things that just simmers.
Yeah. I mean, the pictures are just absolutely stunning.
Devastating. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, our thoughts to everybody up there. It's just a horrible, horrible scene. And despite the efforts to, you know, even rain won't put out this fire at this stage. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's just too intense that, you know, rain can't really put much of a dent in it.
No. Well, yesterday, I got to tell you, I don't know if it's the fact that it's Mother's Day's weekend or if it was the Cubs-Nat series or the Sox and the Twinkies or what, but it was just a crazy day.
Sox and the Twinkies.
You never heard of the Twinkies? Sam knows that, right?
Ozzy used to call them the piranhas.
The piranhas?
Because they just wouldn't go away.
Oh.
That was when they had that run in the 2000s where they were winning the division pretty much every year. Did you watch the Derby, Rick?
No.
He did. See, nobody really
actually,
cares.
I did, but it was I was watching hockey on the other TV when I was watching it. Yeah, I didn't. No, I mean, I've never been a big horse racing enthusiast.
And the people that watch it, I mean, I would go as far as to say half of them are just there to drink.
Right.
The other half are maybe fans just for the Triple Crown. But I don't think horse racing. You could even throw boxing in the equation. I mean, those two sports just continue to get less and less popular.
I don't know. Maybe it's a generational thing. I mean, you know, obviously with off-track betting and that kind of thing to try to generate interest in the sport, but it doesn't. I mean, I realized the winning horse was Nyquist, but I thought it was NyQuil.
NyQuil.
It might be more appropriate. the Derby didn't do anything for me. But all these people in town yesterday, and you got to love it because it was just such a mess to try to get to downtown yesterday. You had the around Wacker and State Street was shut down for the Polish parade. And then that had traffic diverted onto all the other streets downtown. And then, of course, if that wasn't bad enough, then you had the bridge up for a boat on Michigan Avenue. So you should have seen Lower Michigan Avenue and Lower Wacker Drive yesterday, because everybody thought they were being smart to take the underground route to avoid everything, and that worked fine till they got to the river.
It was still slow going yesterday morning on Columbus, as they were packing up the last things from the NFL draft.
That was still shut down?
Yesterday it was. This morning, however, it was open. We have the Susan G. Komen race going on in Grant Park this morning, though, so things are closed there for a little while. But, yeah, they finally packed up and opened up Balbo, I guess yesterday afternoon or during the evening.
Well, it was closed this morning, like you said. Is Grant Park open at all? Like,
yes.
I mean, I feel like it's just closed all summer. Through summer, it's
closed. It's the middle of May. Next month is June. They'll start to set up for Taste of Chicago.
The official color is orange of Grant Park.
And Lollapalooza later.
Oh,
as we've said, forever open, free, and clear, right?
Yes, indeed. 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 Well, I mean, just there's always something. That's the great part about the city. There is always something. The bad part is there's always something.
Thank you, George Bernard Shaw.
What can I tell you? But it is great, and what a beautiful day it is this morning. Obviously, people getting ready for Mother's Day brunches and those kinds of things, and you couldn't ask for better weather, and it's frankly about time. Although, I mean, it was still chilly this morning when I was coming in. It was like 44 degrees.
Yeah, we're looking
like
46
that.
Now just at O'Hare yet.
See?
So,
yeah.
As the sun comes up, we'll see that go up. And we're still dealing with the cooler near the lake weather as well, you know.
Actually, it felt warmer near the lake.
it was strange yesterday. About this time yesterday, it was in the upper 60s, and by 8:30, temperature had dropped 15, 20 degrees in places.
Yeah, no, I know. It you could feel it because Friday, after Friday, where it was just so glorious and 80s type, and it lasted into the night. You know, you could sit outside and kind of enjoy things, and you could definitely tell how that temperature dropped last night. It was not patio weather, as they say.
Not quite.
But very soon, very soon. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Sam Panayotovich here with your latest sports updates. We've got producer Rachel today fielding our phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's also our text line, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is here as always, pushing all the buttons that make everything work here on the mighty 720. Always remember this: if you have to tune away, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. And you can also get our podcasts at iTunes. Search for my name, Rick Pearson. Well, coming up, we've got a great show today. Joining me after Dave's 7:30 news update is Democratic consultant Tom Bowen. He's with New Chicago Consulting and Max Strategies Group. And we'll talk about the fallout from Donald Trump becoming the presumptive Republican nominee and what the takeaway for Democrats is from that. After the 8 o'clock news, we'll be speaking to my good friend Chris Mooney. Chris is the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. We'll be talking about Trump, the Democrats, Hillary and Bernie, and politics closer to home. And then after the 8:30 news update, we'll be joined by Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel. The chief will be with us to discuss concerns in the law enforcement community over how the state's budget impasse and lack of money for some social services are hurting at-risk youth. That's all coming up. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, 720 on this 720 radio station on this Sunday morning. It's time now for our weekly spin through national politics. And You know, so much has happened since our last show. A big primary in Indiana turned into a knockout primary for Republicans as Donald Trump won big. Texas Senator Ted Cruz, Ohio Governor John Kasich, they bid farewell to the race. But let's kind of remember how that primary day started last Tuesday. I mean, just very bizarre. You had Donald Trump appearing on Fox News accusing Ted Cruz's father of being part of the conspiracy to kill JFK.
I implore, I exhort every member of the body of Christ to vote according to the word of God and vote for the candidate that stands on the word of God and on the Constitution of the United States of America. And I am convinced that man is my son, Ted Cruz. The alternative could be the destruction of America.
Does that resonate with the folks there in Indiana?
I think it's a disgrace that he's allowed to do it. I think it's a disgrace that he's allowed to say it. You know, I'm backed by you look at Jerry Falwell Jr. and you look at so many of the ministers that are backing me, and they're backing me more so than they're backing Cruz, and I'm winning the evangelical vote. And it's disgraceful that his father can go out and do that. And so many people are angry about it. And the evangelicals are angry about it, the way he does that. And, you know, there's a whole thing. And you know, his father was with Lee Harvey Oswald prior to Oswald's being, shot. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. What is this, right prior to his being shot? And nobody even brings it up. I mean, they don't even talk about that. That was reported, and nobody talks about it. But
That was reported by the always reliable National Enquirer. Now, of course, that prompted Cruz to lash out with one of his most bitter attacks on Trump, but it was on primary day, and it was ultimately too little, too late.
This morning, Donald Trump went on national television and attacked my father. Donald Trump alleges that my dad was involved in assassinating JFK. Now, let's be clear. This is nuts. This is not a reasonable position. This is just kooky. And while I'm at it, I guess I should go ahead and admit, yes, my dad killed JFK. He is secretly Elvis, and Jimmy Hoffa is buried in his backyard. I'm going to do something I haven't done for the entire campaign, for those of y'all who have traveled with me all across the country. I'm going to tell you what I really think of Donald Trump. This man is a pathological liar. He doesn't know the difference between truth and lies. He lies practically every word that comes out of his mouth. And in a pattern that I think is straight out of a psychology textbook, his response is to accuse everybody else of lying. He accuses everybody on that debate stage of lying. And it's simply a mindless yell. Whatever he does, he accuses everyone else of doing. The man cannot tell the truth, but he combines it with being a narcissist. A narcissist at a level I don't think this country's ever seen. Think about the next 5 years. The boasting, the pathological lying, the picking up the National Enquirer and accusing people of killing JFK, the bullying. Think about your kids coming back and emulating this.
So then the votes happened, and Cruz ended his bid, the outsider candidate who got outsided by Donald Trump's candidacy. And John Kasich, looking to be the compromise candidate, won't have that brokered convention that he needed. Here's John Kasich's farewell.
I've always said that the Lord has a purpose for me, as he has for everyone. And as I suspend my campaign today, I have renewed faith, deeper faith, that the Lord will show me the way forward and fulfill the purpose of my life. Thank you, and God bless.
So that leaves us with a Republican Party that just in a few days' time has splintered across the landscape. Major Republican players saying they fear the worst for the GOP in the fall elections. The publication Politico obtained a tape of Arizona Senator John McCain speaking to his supporters and his concerns about Trump being on the ticket with him. I want you to listen to this very closely.
I do not take my primary opponent lightly. I am working hard to make sure we win there. But have no doubt that if it is Donald Trump at the top of the ticket here in Arizona, with over 30% of the vote being Hispanic vote, I have no doubt that this may be the race of my life. People are angry. They're upset. They feel that there's this disconnect and all of that. And frankly, there's an element of nativism in it as well, as you know. The first wedge that Donald Trump had that gave him notoriety was build the wall, rapists, murderers, etc. So, and if you have friends of yours or you listen to or watch Hispanic media in the state and in the country, you will see that it is all anti-Trump.
That's Arizona Senator John McCain. You've also got Republican National Chairman Reince Priebus trying to urge calm in the face of a windstorm. But the winds just seem to be getting more fierce.
I think something different and something new is probably good for our party. And look, I don't think anyone predicted what happened. So look, we're here. We're going to get behind the presumptive nominee. I stated the obvious in the tweet. Obviously, you still have to get to 1,237 delegates. That number still stands. But I, obviously, without Ted Cruz in the race, who did something that I agree was very gracious last night.
That's RNC Chairman Reince Priebus. We'll be back after a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on Good Sunday morning, everyone. Happy Mother's Day. Beautiful Sunday morning on Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and this is your Sunday Spin. We're going to be talking a lot about the issue of presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump and what that means for the Republican Party, what that means for the Democratic Party as well. But you're literally almost, I believe, looking at a civil war going on in the ranks of the Republicans. And one of the most interesting comments came when House Speaker Paul Ryan of Janesville went on CNN and basically said he's not ready to endorse Donald Trump.
I'm just not ready to do that at this point. I'm not there right now. And I hope to, though, and I want to. But I think what is required is that we unify this party. And I think the bulk of the burden on unifying the party will have to come from our presumptive nominee. I don't want to underplay what he accomplished. He needs to be congratulated for an enormous accomplishment, for winning not now a plurality of delegates, and he's on his way to winning a majority of delegates. But he also inherited something very special, that's very special to a lot of us. This is the party of Lincoln, of Reagan, of Jack Kemp. And we don't always nominate a Lincoln and a Reagan every 4 years. But we hope that our nominee aspires to be Lincoln and Reagan-esque, that person advances the principles of our party and appeals to a wide, vast majority of Americans.
Now, Ryan is supposed to meet with Trump later this week, and we'll see how that goes down. But you've got Jeb Bush saying he just can't cast a vote for president. Lindsey Graham, no way. And, yes, others that defeated Trump have gotten behind the presumptive nominee. But I want you to listen to this ad that Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton put together featuring some of the things that Trump's previous opponents said about Trump during the Republican campaign.
I am a unifier. We're going to be a unified party.
He is a con artist.
A phony.
Donald Trump is the know-nothing candidate.
Donald is a bully.
This is an individual who mocked a disabled reporter.
I don't remember.
Who attributed a reporter's questions to her menstrual cycle.
Blood coming out of her, wherever.
The most vulgar person to ever aspire to the presidency.
The man who seems to only feel big when he's trying to make other people look small.
Don't worry about it, little Marco.
Gentlemen, the man is utterly amoral.
The sign of deep insecurity and weakness.
The bullying, the greed, the showing off.
I'm really rich.
The misogyny, the absurd third grade theatrics.
Count to ten, Donald. Count to ten.
He's a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot.
A narcissist at a level I don't think this country's ever seen.
He would not be the commander-in-chief we need to keep our country safe.
This guy is so unfit to be commander-in-chief.
His domestic policies,
would lead to recession. His foreign policies would make America and the world less safe.
I bring people together. Everybody loves me.
He needs therapy.
So there you have it, that from Hillary Clinton's campaign. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Tom Bowen, Democratic strategist, consultant, New Chicago, and Max Strategies. Thanks so much for getting up with me this morning.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm great. You know, it's amazing how things turn so quickly after the Indiana primary. I don't think anybody expected that Ted Cruz was going to drop out as quickly. John Kasich, of course, his hopes were always based on a brokered convention. But the dynamics of now with Donald Trump as the presumptive Republican nominee, it's the split in the Republican Party is just huge.
Yeah, Captain America Civil War isn't the big show this weekend. It's Paul Ryan versus Donald Trump Civil War.
Yeah, and I mean, the effects of it, though, are far-reaching.
Yeah, and traditionally, both sides expect about 90% of their self-identified supporters to vote for them and turn out. And dips in those percentages are pretty significant. Now, usually some sort of crossover appeal is driving that. But in this case, you know, you see the leader of the Republican Party in the House of Representatives, Paul Ryan, flat out say that he's not enthusiastically behind the nominee. That's a very, very big warning sign for Republicans, because Paul Ryan is not a dumb politician. He represents conservatives, but he represents some areas that have young families. I mean, he himself is kind of that generation. And I think a lot of Republicans in suburban areas are going to have a very hard time casting a vote to put Donald Trump's finger over the nuclear button. And as much enthusiasm as he's drawing in some rural areas and some areas that have had manufacturing declines, you can't have those two things happen. You can't just expect to outperform in rural areas and have that make up the difference. You're going to lose in suburban areas.
You're not going to give the votes. I mean, in the rural areas, the numbers aren't there
in
a great enough way.
Right.
And, of course, you know, as we heard from Paul Ryan, and you take that back and let's remember the Republican autopsy that Reince Priebus conducted. And it was all about, and let's face it, it's true in both parties. It's all about growing the party.
Yeah. In politics, you win by addition, not subtraction. And after 2012, the autopsy you're referring to, the Republicans said we need to appeal to married women, single women, college-educated and non-college-educated, and Hispanic constituencies. And Donald Trump has so thoroughly insulted just about every demographic group in the country that those Hispanic constituencies are never going to be for him. And most of those, you know, married women, college-educated women, non-college-educated women, there's just no way they look at somebody like that who's basically a misogynist and are going to come out and support him. Now, he is going to win some additional support from non-college-educated white men. He's going to win support in the Midwest. It looks like his polling is stronger right now than the South and the West. But as you stated, those constituencies, they're not so voluminous that they're going to outweigh what he will lose in metropolitan, suburban, exurban communities.
You know, I retweeted the Donald Trump tweet on
Thursday. Cinco de Mayo boat taco Thursday.
Yes, of Donald Trump eating a taco salad and then saying, "I love Hispanics." And someone said, "Oh, it's great that the media is covering tweets," but quite frankly, that's part of the way Donald Trump communicates.
Yeah, and you know, look, I do want to take a step back here. He is, I think, one of the most foolish decisions the party collectively has made as a nominee in the modern era, because of how much he risks for them. But you have to give the guy credit. He beat 5 U.S. senators, 4 governors, in probably the most robust Republican field, probably in the modern era. And he didn't just beat them, you know, by squeaking out a win. He beat them handily without really raising money, without having establishment support. So his win is extraordinary, and he will make this race somewhat closer than everyone perceives it right now. But after those three debates where, you know, some 150 million people are going to watch him debate Secretary Clinton, I think the character and fear, or I should say the character that he will show in those debates, I do not think people will trust him being their president.
Well, and he also did it, too, unconventionally.
Yes.
I mean, in the most unconventional campaign this country, I think, has ever seen. And part of it is the social media aspect of it. Part of it is that largely self-funded.
Yep.
But also, you know, let's face it, the media helped make up for a lot of the lack of the need for Trump to advertise.
Yeah, well, the media's job is to cover, you know, the first three letters in news are N-E-W, and that guy does it every day. So I understand, you know, a little bit of the tricky nature of what they're covering or what they have to do in order to cover him properly. But, you know, the other thing people need to remember is a primary election over 50 states all happening at different times. I mean, you're talking, you know, less than probably 25 million people that are going to be casting a vote. This is, you know, over 200 million and, well, depending on, you know, turnout levels. And all happening at the same time, and the entire country is focused on it in November again after national debates. There is a much different slice of the electorate, and in presidential years, young people turn out at higher margins. Hispanic community turns out at higher margins. African American community, depending on kind of, you know, some of them are more consistent up here in the north and the south. It's a little less consistent. But all those folks that are kind of less connected to the process will be paying attention and turning out, and he and Trump's done everything possible to, I think, offend those folks and make them less likely to, you know, turn away from the party who has consistently fought for them, advocated for them, and sought their vote.
We're speaking with Thomas Bowen, Democratic consultant and strategist. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Happy Mother's Day, everyone, on this gorgeous, gorgeous Sunday in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and joining me here is Tom Bowen, Democratic strategist. We're talking about what kind of effects there may be with Donald Trump as the presumptive Republican nominee from a Democratic perspective. And, you know, Tom, we were kind of talking about the issue of the demography, and let's kind of bring it closer to home.
Sure.
To Chicago, with, you know, obviously the collars more Republican oriented, downstate, deeper downstate more Republican. You know, this is a critical election year in a number of ways, and you've already seen kind of this. The Civil War issue among Republicans here, with the fact you've got Governor Rauner is now saying he's not going to formally endorse the presumptive nominee, Mr. Trump.
Even though he already said
he would support him. But he, right. He's not going to the Republican National Convention.
Neither is Senator Kirk.
Right. And so, you know, you've got this kind of trying to create distance. Obviously, for Mark Kirk, it's a matter of self-preservation. But with Bruce Rauner, for example, here's a guy who wants to erode those Democratic supermajorities in the General Assembly. Early Friday evening, just put $5 million of his own money, of his campaign funds money, into the Illinois Republican Party war chest.
And, you know, there's two problems here. I mean, I think folks who are running statewide are just in a terrible wave, terrible position. You know, the comptroller Munger,
Leslie Munger,
Senator Kirk. There's just nothing they can do to hide from that because it's a net negative. The state of Illinois, the downstate communities are different than obviously some of the collar counties around suburban around Chicago, and I think both parties are going to play it sort of much more conservative downstate, where you don't want to openly advocate that you're for Trump, but you want to kind of mimic some of his policies, because obviously he makes your path difficult, even in a downstate environment. But he will bring out some folks who are going to be, you know, more affected by manufacturing job loss, a little angrier, probably more male, probably white. And I do think there will be some motivation that Democrats will try and do in minority communities to bring out their voters in that area. But in the suburban area, I mean, if you're a guy like Mike McAuliffe, you're terrified at what Trump is going to do, because those Republican voters you need to vote for you, who are small business owners, who are college educated, who are married women, they're likely to just skip this race because there's no way they can support that kind of a nominee. And they're going to have to try and, you know, have somebody like Mark Kirk, who does have some moderate credentials, drag out some of those voters for him. But given that, Tammy Duckworth is likely to have a lead, given the polling that even Mark Kirk has released, I think someone like Mike McAuliffe is in deep trouble. And on the flip side, in the Senate, I think someone like, you know, Senator Tom Cullerton, who was kind of an obvious target from the beginning there, is in a much, much stronger position now, because, A, he's the kind of guy that appeals to some of that white working class vote. But again, those sort of Republican voters that, you know, Governor Rauner and the Republicans are going to need to come out in order to beat some of those down ballot targets, they're just not going to be there. And motivation, you know, please save my, you know, please help me get a, you know, not super majority in the legislature. That's just not a message that's going to turn people out.
Well, what about the, you know, the old adage about, you know, all politics is local? I mean, and I agree with that to some extent, except in a presidential year, everything to me, it's driven by the what goes on, you know, at the top of the ticket.
Ticket splitting has become less frequent as time has gone on in the past, you know, 12 years. But think about this a different way. One of the reasons a presidential race kind of dominates everything is because it's very well covered. Well, Donald Trump is going to tweet a lot, and Donald Trump is going to get out there and say provocative things. Donald Trump has injected himself into the media narrative about politics in a way none of us have ever seen, probably will never see again. This is a unique thing. So how can you, if you're a, you know, local Republican or local Democrat, really inject that much political, you know, news into people's views to actually get, you know, their attention on the issues? You're going to get to say one, maybe two things. The rest of it is going to be, and frankly, the media is going to start polling, you know, legislators and candidates to see if they're supporting Trump or not, because frankly, and there's candidates right now that are hiding from this question. You know how the media, like, if someone doesn't want to answer something, they go after it even harder. I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing the media bring this down to every other race and say, well, are you for him or not? And if you're not for him, why? Well, what about, you know, building the wall? I mean, there are federal candidates out there that have to answer these questions, but there are state candidates that, you know, it's a way to kind of elicit viewpoints from these people.
And I mean, quite frankly, I think it's a way, because of Trump and the controversial things that he says, that just the media is going to ask any local candidate, did you hear what Trump said?
Right.
And try to elicit some response.
And the governor is going to have to answer these things too, because regardless of whether he's up for election or not, he is the leader, as he is self-proclaimed, of the party in this state. And this is a value statement about the party. Donald Trump has said, let me give you a very specific example about economics. Donald Trump said yesterday to CNBC, or the day before, I'm sorry, that bondholders should take a haircut for U.S. debt. Now, that is an extraordinary statement. That is something no nominee, no even sort of gadfly has ever contemplated saying, that, you know, the national debt should be defaulted on. So how is it, if you're the governor of, you know, one of the largest states in the country, how can you not have a comment on something like that?
Right. And as of right now, the governor's comments are, I've said all I'm going to say about the Republican presidential candidate. Well, I'm not sure that's going to satisfy
probably not
anyone. Okay, we've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome, as always, to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick, and to your guests. Ordinarily, I don't put a lot of significance on choosing a vice president, but I think with Donald Trump and with a lot of the negative ratings, I think it's going to be very important. And also with Hillary Clinton, if she becomes nominee. But I want to ask your guest, because he has alienated so many groups of people. I mean, does he look for a particular demographic group? Does he look for, like, a particular state and maybe choosing a governor? Or does he try to pick a candidate that is more from the establishment Republican Party? I just think it's going to be a big challenge for him. But because of the, like I said, because of the negative ratings, I think it's going to, you know, make a big, you know, decision.
Okay.
As far as helping him out. Okay, thanks, guys.
Sure, thanks, Ron.
Ron, that's a great question. I think the way Mr. Trump is going to approach this, a little bit, he has revealed to the media that he wants to help pick somebody that's going to help him govern. So I think he will go a little more traditional, elected official, former elected official. And I heard some great analysis about sort of what is opportune for Donald Trump, and that is to make a media statement or make a splash in the media, but not have somebody who's such, you know, so flashy that they might upstage him. So a great bit of speculation was that he might pick former state of Virginia U.S. Senator Jim Webb, pick a Democrat, but a conservative, a veteran, military experience, you know, former defense secretary. Maybe he was head of the Navy.
Navy, I believe.
That sounds like, you know, the kind of pick that Trump can make that will at least shore up his can you do the job. And I think that's the area that is most significant. I don't think there are areas, you know, to Ron's question of folks that he's insulted. He's not going to be able to pick a Hispanic and actually bridge any of those gaps. He's not going to be able to pick, I think, a woman and bridge some of those gaps because the problem is sort of him. But I think a little bit of out of the box pick should be expected, but also somebody that has experience. I've heard Speaker Gingrich is in the mix. Yes. That is probably a little more upstaging him than he would want to have, but I think they have a bond. The other name I've heard, Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions.
That's Tom Bowen, a Democratic strategist, consultant for the New Chicago and Max Strategies. Tom, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me in, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome to the second hour of the Sunday Spin for this Sunday, this beautiful Sunday. Happy Mother's Day, everybody. President Obama, during a press conference recently, he lectured the media for spending too much time focusing on the spectacle and circus that is Donald Trump. And instead of he said the media needs to spend more time about actually checking out whether there's any substance to his statements. Here's the president.
I just want to emphasize the degree to which we are in serious times, and this is a really serious job. This is not entertainment. This is not a reality show. This is a contest for the presidency of the United States. And what that means is that every candidate, every nominee, needs to be subject to exacting standards and genuine scrutiny. It means that you got to make sure that their budgets add up. It means that if they say they've got an answer to a problem, that it is actually plausible and that they have details for how it would work. And if it's completely implausible and would not work, that needs to be reported on. And the American people need to know that.
That's the president's critique of the media over its coverage of Donald Trump. Joining me now on the phone is my good friend Chris Mooney. Chris is the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Chris, good morning.
Morning, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I don't know if you had a chance to listen. We had Democratic consultant Tom Bowen on earlier to talk about how the kind of the Democratic take on Donald Trump being the presumptive nominee on the Republican side and what that might mean for Democrats. And I guess I'm curious about maybe what your take is as far as Illinois. I mean, this was already going to be, you know, one of the most interesting election seasons, given the fact of the Springfield stalemate, the kind of proxy war that we can see in some of these legislative races as Governor Rauner tries to erase those Democratic supermajorities. And Tom touched on the fact, and that's actually a point we should talk about, is you have this special statewide election for Illinois Comptroller, which is going to be, very much overshadowed, I think, by what's going on with the presidential race and the U.S. Senate race. But that in itself is somewhat of a proxy war with Leslie Munger, who was the appointed comptroller after Judy Bart Topinka's death, appointed by Governor Rauner, and Susana Mendoza, the Democrat, who's the Chicago city clerk. This is just going to be an unbelievable November.
Well, we just had a little preview of it in March, and for those of us that live in, for example, the House 5th District down in the south side where Ken Duncan and Juliana Stratton they weren't really the ones that were driving it. They were sort of the people in the suits and the certainly it had to do with who they were, but it was a massive effort. So much money, so much time, so many mailers, so much TV, and I think that was just a preview of what we're going to see. But really, what's probably going to happen, I would suspect, because the fight's going to move to the suburbs in the fall. Because that's where the marginal districts are. There's a few of them around. There's one in Kankakee that's marginal. There's one out in the Quad Cities. There's going to be a few of them around the state, in the south, way in the southern part of the state. The governor and his people have proven that they've got as much money as it's going to take. Because the kind of money that they have relative to what it takes to really run a crazy expensive race in the state legislature is not. It's sort of peanuts to them, right? And the Democrats they're going to come right back as well to defend. It's going to be crazy. But the presidential race is going to undoubtedly overshadow everything. It's going to be nasty. And I think the Republicans in Illinois are probably not too happy to have Donald Trump at the top of the ticket, because this is another way the Democrats can batter them about the head and shoulders throughout the campaign season.
Well, Chris, as far as Republican candidates and Republican office holders seeking re-election, mm-hmm. Trump almost becomes kind of a I don't want to say litmus test, but it is kind of a default question to ask these candidates where they stand on their presumptive presidential nominee.
Oh, absolutely. And the Democrats will hold them to it. There's going to be places where the Republicans will go with Trump and be proud of it. But those aren't going to be the places where there's going to be a battle. It's going to be, like I say, in the suburbs, the near-in suburbs, the places where the Democrats have built their supermajority, so to speak, around the state. Because those are the marginal districts. Those are the districts where it could go either way, but with a fair amount of money and all the skill of the Democrat political machine has shown, especially the House machine, that they are able to take and keep these seats over the years. But so it's going to be, I think it's definitely going to be a net negative for Rauner's efforts to cut into Madigan and Cullerton's lead in the two chambers.
We're speaking with Christopher Mooney, Director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Joining me on the phone is Chris Mooney, Director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Chris, before we continue, I wanted to read Donald Trump's response to U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham refusing to support him. This is Donald Trump, quote, I fully understand why Lindsey Graham cannot support me. If I got beaten as badly as I beat him and all the other candidates he endorsed, I would not be able to give my support either. Every time I see Lindsey Graham spew hate during interviews, I ask why the media never questions how I single-handedly destroyed his hapless run for president. As a candidate who did not receive 1% in his own state, compared to my victory at nearly 40% with many others in the race, he has zero credibility. And he goes on to say, now, of course, one thing to note that when the South Carolina primary rolled around, Lindsey Graham had already been out of it for a couple of weeks. So his name was still on the ballot, but he was no longer an active candidate. But that is not a factor for Donald J. Trump. I know the president says it's not entertainment, but let's face it, there is an entertainment factor in this, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And politics, I mean, there's no doubt that politics always has an entertainment value. And, you know, in the early American history, it was like the great show that was going on. I mean, they had elections all the time. It was, you know, stump speeches. I mean, you think about the Douglas and Lincoln debates. They went on. It was a party. It was like Woodstock, you know, all over the state. It would go on for a whole day and more. So, yeah, there's always entertainment value. And I tell people the difference between, for example, sports, which is something that it really parallels in that sense, that you got teams and people are competing and somebody's going to win. The difference between sports and politics is that at the end of the day, Blackhawks win the World Cup. They don't. I mean,
Stanley Cup.
Sorry, or they don't. Oh yeah, you know, 5 minutes later, you know, what's for dinner? You know, I mean, who cares? You know, I mean, you get a glow and it's fine, but it doesn't have any impact. Whereas in politics, it does matter who wins, and that gives it, I guess, gives it an edge. But you know, one of the things I'm looking at with Trump, and you know, it's just hard to look at him and the way he's developing this campaign and his persona over the course of the last 12 months now almost. Is the thing that keeps coming to my mind is the movie Borat. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, but it's basically a punk movie where a guy pretends to be a particular character from Tajikistan or something, or one of those Central Asian republics, and he goes to America, and it's a mockumentary, and he goes up to people, just average people doing different things, and he does outrageous things, and they don't know that he's fake, and so the funniness is how they react to him, and he just keeps ramping up the lunacy as far as he can go until they just can't believe it. And you know, when I saw Trump tweeting out the taco bowl
right
the other day,
yes,
and saying I love Hispanics, I eat tacos, it was straight out of Borat. I mean, that is so extreme and so crazy and so offensive but you know, the emperor still has clothes on until, you know, who knows? I mean, it's hard to take the guy seriously, but you know, he may be the leader of the free world in about 8 months. So it's good to take a look at him.
We had one commentator who said that methinks Dem strategists are underestimating Trump. He is not to be underestimated because the old playbook is inapplicable. What do you think?
I think that's very true. And I think that's obviously the problem that the Republicans had with him. And, you know, there was some, Rudy Giuliani was on, you know, whatever, CNN a few weeks ago, and he was endorsing, well, he said he'd endorse Trump, but he was voting for him and he wanted him to win. And he said that Trump is like, you know, he's like Mariano Rivera. He comes at you with these slicing cutters and, you know, these crazy, you know, you don't expect it. Whereas a guy like Cruz is sort of a, you know, flat, straight fastball that they knew how to deal with him because they've been dealing with that kind for a long time. It would have been easy. But Trump might change the map around a little bit. So maybe there's going to be more competition, say, in Michigan and in Wisconsin and in Pennsylvania, sort of Rust Belt states, where he might, you know, especially this sort of nativist anti-trade sort of Pat Buchanan approach to the world might have some resonance to, you know, to the guy, you know, guys who I grew up with, who, you know, their dad worked at A. O. Smith or Honnershager or Milwaukee Tool or GM and had a nice life. And now but where is my job at GM? You know, where's my job at Honnershager? They don't exist anymore.
Well, you know, you also have this factor too, an analysis from the polling firm Public Opinion Strategies says that turnout in GOP presidential primaries this year is up 64%. How does that translate to the general election?
Well, it's hard to know because turnout is going to be related to the level of competition and whatnot. And when you've got all these different candidates, that's going to more in line, especially in a lot of interest in the GOP primary for a long time. So, or throughout, I mean, it's not just been, you know, by the time you get to New Hampshire, it's all over like
right.
It often is. So it's hard to know how that's going to translate into the fall because, there's going to be a lot more people vote in the general election, and especially a lot more Democrats vote in the general election than they do in the primary. And, you know, Trump may energize a lot of people as he's done in the Republican primary. And, maybe there are some independents out there, people that don't normally vote. That's what they're banking on. Although, you know, history shows that if, you know, people that don't normally vote, you know, I mean,
right.
so the fact, you know, if they're counting on bringing on, you know, millions of new voters, well, you know, that's tough to do. It's kind of a chimera now. And also, Trump is potentially, and if the Democrats do it right, I mean, if they work the campaign right, and, you know, I presume they will, he's going to energize a lot of Democrats too, and a lot of independents. And you're getting back to Illinois, we're talking about how this might affect Illinois. The swing vote, I mean, the sort of old saw in recent elections is that the swing voter on statewide elections in Illinois is a suburban independent woman who is socially liberal and fiscally conservative. Donald Trump scares the hell out of that woman. And I think that's, you know, his negatives with women nationwide, his negatives with people that aren't white, that's going to be tough when you get into the general election. Now you're absolutely right. He's probably underestimated by a lot of people, and a lot of Republican candidates found that out to their peril. I don't think the Democrats are going to underestimate him. I think they know what they've got here. But who knows? We'll see.
Well, and as much as we might speculate on people that Trump might bring out to vote, you will have that cadre of Republicans that we've seen in this kind of civil war that's developed of conservatives that have already said they're just not going to vote.
Yeah, and I wonder about that. We'll see how that plays out. I mean, the right wing, you know, could they throw up a candidate? In that case, I think, you know, then it's very difficult for Trump to do well at all. But they're probably going to see that, and they have to say, well, would we prefer to have a purist to vote for and lose brilliantly, or do we want to make sure that Hillary Clinton doesn't get elected? And the latter may be the thing that really drives them, and they may come to reconciliation. You know, the ones that are coming out right now and saying, no way I'm ever going to vote for Trump, that may be true because it's hard to back down like the Bushes. It's hard to back down. But when, you know, but you look at like a Paul Ryan who says, well, I'm not quite there yet. I just have to think about this. They're just getting used to the idea, and they may come around, and especially if it starts looking close. You know, they want to make sure that Congress stays in the hands of Republicans regardless. You know, so they're going to, I mean, I think there's going to be less. I think Donald Trump will be embraced more by the Republican establishment as time goes on. And they're just going to have to live with it, I think, and they will.
That's Christopher Mooney, director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Chris, thanks so much for getting up with me this morning.
Hey, my pleasure, Rick. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
We'll be back with more right after this.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on this beautiful Sunday in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Once again, happy Mother's Day to everyone. You know, I've talked about this subject before, about the issue of teaching civics to students. And, of course, we now have a new state law that requires it, and perhaps we need it now more than ever. And as a result of this law, there is the Illinois Civics Academy for Teachers at Kankakee Community College, and that's going to be held June 20th through 23rd at Kankakee Community College's Riverfront campus. And the folks there have put together a program for teachers. And in fact, Sean Healy, who I've had on the program from McCormick Foundation and McCormick Foundation itself, they're underwriting the cost of this event for teachers. And so if you want to find out, if you're a teacher, want to find out more information about this, you can go to www.kcc.edu/ICAT. And that's Dr. Christine Condon there, who's the program coordinator and professor, putting on that instructional program for teachers. And it's a great development for education in the state of Illinois. Well, joining me now on the phone is Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel. And Tom agreed to join me this morning after testifying recently before the Illinois House of Representatives on the Springfield impasse, the budget stalemate, month number 11 now, and the impact that this is having on programs affecting at-risk youth. Chief, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
So maybe you could kind of summarize, kind of the testimony you gave about, we talk frequently on this program about these kind of social service safety net programs that are, they're not under the court orders or anything else that is resulting in 92% of government being paid by fiat. But these are core programs that, once they go away, no one's sure that they can ever really come back again.
That's very true. I was recently testifying at a subcommittee hearing for budgeting purposes, and I was testifying on behalf of Fight Crime, Invest in Kids Illinois. I serve as one of their executive board members and the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. And, some of the legislators found it a little unusual that I was sitting at a desk with six other social service providers, and then there was a police chief in
right.
there, and they kind of quizzed me on that, and they wanted to know why I was testifying along with these social service organizations. Well, these programs that are not getting funded now, or in some cases have already gone away, directly affect law enforcement in Illinois and the crime rate, and they are solid programs with data. Because when I've been in Springfield, Rick, I've been down there, and every time I go down to testify or to lobby on behalf of Fight Crime, Invest in Kids, or the Illinois Chiefs, they ask us for data. So this time we come back with data, and we give them all the data they need, and they look and they say, Chief, we agree with you. These programs need to be funded. Chief, we agree. We agree. And even when the testimony is over, I talk to them in person, and they come up to me and they say, Chief, I agree with you. These programs need to be funded. But nothing is happening. And like you said earlier, nothing has happened in 11 months. And your listeners should know some of these programs, such as Redeploy Illinois and Teen Reach and parent coaching programs, have been severely cut or in some cases completely cut. And that's just not Cook County. I mean, we're talking about Crawford County, Clay County, Edwards County. I could go on and on. Franklin County. These are programs throughout the entire state, so it's just not a Chicago issue.
Well, let's go through these programs a little bit, because I'm sure, a lot of people aren't necessarily that familiar with them. But if you could maybe, what is Redeploy Illinois?
Redeploy Illinois has probably the most successful program that has been funded out there for counties to participate in, such as programs that keeps kids out of juvenile detention facilities. In some cases, have programs and services that once they've been released, you can follow them, assist them so that they don't return to juvenile justice facilities. Just for example, we did a study, Redeploy had an independent study done, and in 2015, there was 295 youths that took programs from Redeploy. That cost the state $1.6 million. Those same 295 youth in the Department of Juvenile Justice is $32.7 million, and those are hard facts and data. And not only are we having savings, but these are actually giving the children, in most cases teens, a chance to not reoffend and then not go back into the juvenile justice system, which then obviously helps the taxpayers. But it also helps law enforcement, because when we're seeing these kids are usually after school. Many of them have single parents. They work during the day. When their kids are out of school at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the parents aren't home till 6 or 6:30. That's a prime time in law enforcement for juveniles committing crimes. Some of them are serious, some of them petty crimes. But here's some data for Redeploy. It actually literally works. And, you know, Rick, your listeners, nobody disagrees with that. Nobody disagrees that Redeploy Illinois is a solid program that has results, yet they won't fund it to the level that it should be.
And it's not a partisan issue. I mean,
no, we never fight crime busting kids in Illinois. These are nonpartisan. I don't get anything from them. The chiefs don't get anything from them. We don't. Only thing we're getting is it actually helps law enforcement do their job. It does reduce crime. And so those are the programs we want to get out, because the chiefs, you know, I've been in law enforcement 31 years. I've been the police chief in Riverside since 2008. If you interviewed me, Rick, 25 years ago, I would tell you to lock kids up. That's what I would have told you. Nowadays,
well, that was the conventional thinking then.
It was. It absolutely. But nowadays, the chief, even law enforcement leaders throughout the state are saying enough's enough. Keep the violent criminals, adult or juvenile, in custody. The low-level crimes, including low-level drug crimes, let's do another approach. But that's kind of new for law enforcement. So we're trying to join in these organizations and say, yes, these work, and we want to be in the forefront with them.
Well, and frankly, it's kind of a change of thinking that goes beyond law enforcement, because you're finally, you know, you're kind of seeing these really come back again.
You know, that's very true. I was recently testifying at a subcommittee hearing for budgeting purposes, and I was testifying on behalf of Fight Crime, Invest in Kids Illinois. I serve as one of their executive board members and the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. And, you know, some of the legislators found it a little unusual that I was sitting at a desk, testifying at a desk with six other social service providers, and then there was a police chief in
right.
there, and they kind of quizzed me on that, and they wanted to know why I was testifying along with these social service organizations. Well, these programs that are not getting funded now, or in some cases have already gone away, directly affect law enforcement in Illinois and the crime rate, and they are solid programs with data. Because when I've been in Springfield, Rick, I've been down there, and every time I go down there, testify or to lobby on behalf of Fight Crime, Invest in Kids, or the Illinois Chiefs, they ask us for data. So this time we come back with data, and we give them all the data they need, and they look and they say, Chief, we agree with you. These programs need to be funded. Chief, we agree. And even when the testimony is over, I talk to them in person, and they come up to me and they say, Chief, I agree with you. These programs need to be funded. But nothing is happening. And like you said earlier, nothing has happened in 11 months. And your listeners should know some of these programs, such as Redeploy Illinois and Teen Reach and parent coaching programs, have been severely cut, or in some cases, completely cut. And that's just not Cook County. I mean, we're talking about Crawford County, Clay County, Edwards County. I could go on and on. Franklin County. These are programs throughout the entire state, so it's just not a Chicago issue.
Well, let's go through these programs a little bit, because I'm sure, you know, a lot of people aren't necessarily that familiar with them. But if you could maybe, you know, what is Redeploy Illinois?
Redeploy Illinois has probably the most successful program that has been funded out there for counties to participate in, such as programs that keeps kids out of juvenile detention facilities. In some cases, have programs and services that once they've been released, you can follow them, assist them so that they don't return to juvenile justice facilities. Just for example, we did a study. Redeploy had an independent study done. And in 2015, there was 295 youths that took programs from Redeploy. That cost the state $1.6 million. Those same 295 youth in the Department of Juvenile Justice is $32.7 million. And those are hard facts and data. And not only are we having savings, but these are actually giving the children, in most cases teens, a chance to not reoffend and then not go back into the juvenile justice system, which then obviously helps the taxpayers. But it also helps law enforcement, because when we're seeing these kids are usually after school. Many of them have single parents. They work during the day. When their kids are out of school at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the parents aren't home till 6 or 6:30. That's a prime time in law enforcement for juveniles committing crimes. Some of them are serious, some of them petty crimes. But here's some data for Redeploy. It actually literally works. And, you know, Rick, your listeners, nobody disagrees with that. Nobody disagrees that Redeploy Illinois is a solid program that has results, yet they won't fund it to the level that it should be.
And it's not a partisan issue. I mean,
no, and even we never fight crime investing kids in Illinois. These are nonpartisan. I don't get anything from them. The chiefs don't get anything from them. We don't. Only thing we're getting is it actually helps law enforcement do their job. It does reduce crime. And so those are the programs we want to get out, because the chiefs, you know, I've been in law enforcement 31 years. I've been the police chief in Riverside since 2008. If you interviewed me, Rick, 25 years ago, I would tell you to lock kids up. That's what I would have told you. Nowadays,
well, that was the conventional thinking then.
It was. Absolutely. But nowadays, even law enforcement leaders throughout the state are saying enough's enough. Keep the violent criminals, adult or juvenile, in custody. The low-level crimes, including low-level drug crimes, let's do another approach. But that's kind of new for law enforcement. So we're trying to join in these organizations and say, yes, these work, and we want to be in the forefront with them.
Well, and frankly, it's kind of a change of thinking that goes beyond law enforcement, because you're finally, you know, you're kind of seeing these unlikely alliances of you know, fiscal conservatives looking at, you know, what's the cost of incarceration when we could use money, you know, in a more preventative sense, almost like healthcare.
And recently I, along with some other police chiefs, sheriffs, prosecutors, and the fight crime people, we went down to Springfield within the last month and met with both House and Senate leaders, and we got a meeting with the governor personally and the director of public safety, and we presented these programs, and they all said they were great, but nothing ever happens. And you might know, Rick, you probably covered it, but you know they recently came up with about $400 to $600 million for higher education, right? They
600,
found that money.
Yes.
Six, none. Where's the money? How come we're not finding money for these youth-based programs? And I'm not saying it wasn't needed for higher education, but there still isn't $1 for these evidence-based, data-driven, youth-based programs, not one. So I called my personal state legislators and said, if you came up with $600 million, where's the money for Redeploy Illinois, comprehensive community-based youth services, teen reach? Where's the money for that? Well, we don't have the money. Well, you found the money for higher education. I mean, we need to start at a lower level.
We're speaking with Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday That, folks, is the Monkees in their first new album in 20 years. She Makes Me Laugh is the lead single of that, and kind of a nice Mother's Day kind of Monkees music going on here. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm speaking to Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel. And Tom is also on the executive committee of Fight Crime Invest in Illinois, Invest in Kids Illinois. And that's an anti-crime organization of more than 350 police chiefs, sheriffs, prosecutors, leaders of police officer organizations, and crime survivors. And we're talking about the effect of the continuing Springfield impasse on some of these programs that affect high-risk youth. And, Chief, you mentioned Teen Reach as another program. Can you give us tell us what that is?
It's an after-school-based program that, you know, currently we're serving about 1,800 youths, and it's across the state. It's, you know, communities in Peoria, Danville, Rockford, Franklin County. Those are just a few I can mention. And it provides a gap sometimes between school and parenting when the parents get home. It also gives them access to everything from substance abuse to in helping with stable families. So it's a program that has been very successful. And in many cases, some of them have shut their doors, and other of teen reaches have been not funded and are not getting deployed out in the community at all. And it's a shame. I don't know that you know, Rick, but you know that recently we partnered with an organization when we were down testifying, the Illinois Collaboration on Youth. They just filed a lawsuit just to get some of these bills paid.
Right. And
that seems to be where it's going these days. I mean, so they have to file a lawsuit just to get their, keep their doors open, and I don't even know if that lawsuit is going to be successful.
Right. And, in fact, as far as Teen Reach, which about 1,800 youths involved in that program, was funded at $13.8 million in the fiscal year, the budget year, two years ago. But in both of the governor's budget recommendations for these two budget years, has been zeroed out.
He's proposed zeroing those out, and they are zeroed out. And we were asking for just the funding of FY15 or FY4, you know, the 13.8. We would like to get just to that level. We would like to have more as an organization fight crime, and the Illinois Chiefs and Sheriff's Association. But at the minimum, we're asking to restore to the previous funding levels, and that has not been done.
Now, there's also, and I was interested because I'm not familiar with this at all, the kind of parent coaching programs issue. Can you explain that?
Parent coaching is it's a program that is also state funded, as you know. It helps parents at at-risk kids and toddlers. And it reduces child abuse. That's what's behind that, child neglect. It has many other positive aspects. It kind of also involves a component called home visiting. Home visiting is where licensed clinical social workers or other professionals are making visits to these high-risk homes, which and helping the parents. Some of the money is federal funding that comes down and then is passed down to the state. But that serves approximately 6,000 at-risk families and youths. That is also not being funded.
And, I mean, that's 6,000 families that are,
yeah,
are not. So,
yeah, that's a lot. And that's throughout the entire state. But that's all. But you're talking, these are the at-most risk, most kids and their families. And, you know, Rick, these kids, these families are begging us for help. You know, they're begging us for help. Even in my own community in Riverside, we have single parents moving to Riverside to what they believe to put their kids into better school systems. And they bring their into high school so their kids have better opportunities for scholarships and athletic scholarships, even at the grade school level. They stop in and see me because these parents were getting these services when they lived elsewhere. They're coming here. The services aren't being funded, and they're asking us what services does the Riverside provide, the township provide, the West Suburban, Cook County. And there is none that are being funded by these agencies because the programs we're speaking of today, this redeploy, parent coaching, these are all statewide programs. So it's affecting everyone.
And, again, when you're down in Springfield and you're talking to your legislators and our, frankly, the members of the appropriations committees and that, these are great. We need to have them, but then nothing.
That's correct. They're very positive. I mean, they're, when we testify, they agree with us. Because we come prepared. You know, in the past, they've said, okay, you show up and you give us anecdotal information. Come back here with data. Well, we come